Welcome to the Perspectives with Catherine Toon podcast.
Everybody, I am very excited. Someone that is a relatively new friend, but very near and dear. We were talking about sort of divine connections and how beautiful that is. And that is exactly what Robin Beach has been to me and is to me. And you're going to fall in love with him and then just glean from the richness of the revelation he carries. So welcome, Robin.
Thank you, Miss Catherine. It's such a pleasure and an honor to be here with you today.
Yeah, every time Robin and I talk together, we just start, it's like 30 seconds and we're off and running. So I wanted to make sure that we're recording because you have so much to share. And I thought I'd read your bio so people would kind of get an idea of kind of where you're coming from. So I appreciate that. So Robin Michael Beach is a Christ Center professor, theologian, author, teacher, and pastoral care team leader with a deep passion for sharing the teachings of Christ. Robin has dedicated his life to educating and guiding others in their spiritual journeys. As a professor, Robin imparts his extensive knowledge of theology, inspiring students to explore and deepen their faith. His expertise in pastoral care allows him to provide compassionate support and guidance to individuals and communities in need. Through his writings, Robin shares profound insights into Christian faith, offering wisdom and encouragement to readers seeking a deeper understanding of God's love. With a heart devoted to serving others, Robin leads a pastoral care team, ensuring that individuals receive the spiritual and emotional support they require. Through their multifaceted roles, Robin seeks to inspire and empower others to live a Christ-centered life, making a positive impact on both individuals and communities. Along with his wife, Becky, they are founders of The Way Fellowship, NWA, and LifeSpring Mentoring and Counseling. Wow, you are doing a lot. That's amazing, Robin. Thank you. Wow, thank you for being on. I'm amazed you can squeeze me in with all that. So that's amazing. It's so great to have you.
Well, thank you very much. Ever since the first time that I heard you and Dr. Bill Hanshew on a discussion, I thought, wow, that's a sister that I really need to get to know. And Dr. Bill and I had different discussions. He's a very close friend of mine and mentor to me also. And I love Dr. Bill and Dr. Fay very much. And Dr. Bill just told me one day, he said, you know, I think that you and Catherine Toon would probably get good friends if you had a chance to have a conversation. And I said, well, yes, I would love to. And ever since the first time we talked, it's one of those familial type connections that you know that when you have immediately, you're immediately aware of, yes, this person is from my tribe. And so I've enjoyed our conversation. And I think it's even kind of, I laugh sometimes because those people that you meet like that, Miss Catherine, when you meet them, it's not like the conversation ever ends. It's like it's just, it is paused for a little while and then just picks right back up you come back together again. And so that's what it's been like with you.
Yeah, it's been so beautiful. And I love it. Even just before when we were chatting, it's like, whoa, we could squeeze a whole program in before just chatting before the program. And that's so great. But I wanted to make sure we started recording because you had sent me an article you had written about reflective solitude, contemplational prayer, a devotional life. And I thought, wow, this is deep and we're needing this. We're needing a restored devotional life and that contemplational prayer, reflective solitude, however you're calling it. So, wow, help us out. Tell us what you have discovered, what you've been meditating on, what you wrote about, all of that. It's amazing stuff.
Well, in the first section of that article there, that I wrote, one of the things that led me, Miss Catherine, to the determination that this is a subject that needed to be broached within our society today was this phenomenon that you beginning to see that because of the constriction of time that we are under in today's society, because of the pressures of work, the pressures of family, the pressures of the goings and comings simply of our of the ordinariness of our everydays, that there is a demand on our attentiveness in so many subversive and distracting manners that cause us to not allow ourselves at times the silence and the solitude that literally can become the seedbed for a productive spiritual life.
Wow.
And the phenomenon has made it not, instead of the constriction of time, and the phenomenon itself is causing the need to be even that much more imminent.
Yes.
In the very same time that it's becoming less prevalent,
yes,
it's becoming more imminently needed.
Yes.
And so
yes.
I began to ask the Lord, Lord, what is it in today's world? What can we do? Where should we go from here, if you will, so that we can begin to once again formulate the conceptualization of the necessity of what it is to have individual devotional lives,
yeah,
and not only individual devotional lives, but literally to create healthy communities.
Right.
By stressing the need for individuals, but in the context of how the individual participates in the communal aspect of what that can do effectively, is if we're wanting to talk in terms of causality and effect, mm-hmm. how that can affect an entire community when you can create a company of individuals who will begin to see the necessity of that and place a priority upon it.
Wow, that is huge. And it's we need help with this, right? We have this compression of time that once makes it harder, more difficult. You really kind of have to fight for it, make it a priority. And at the same time, the very compression of time makes the need even greater. So this is something so, so important to invest in. And so start to unpack to us what you mean by reflective solitude or contemplative prayer. What do you mean by that? Just for the people who may not be familiar with that terminology.
So one of the things that when I was young, Catherine, I think that it was commonplace among, I grew up as a Protestant evangelical. And one of the things that was so prevalent when we talked about our spiritual lives was prayer. And I was always taught as a young man that prayer was simply talking to God.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't taught that often, and I surely wasn't taught in a very profound way at all, that actually prayer doesn't begin with what we know of as supplication,
mm-hmm.
but prayer begins in the sense of the father-son relationship. Prayer actually is defined to us in the Word in what we know of as the prologue, John chapter 1, mm-hmm. verse 1.
Yes.
In the beginning was the Word,
mm-hmm.
and the Word was with God. Logos, Word, with, pros, God, theos.
Mm-hmm.
Logos, pros, theos.
Mm-hmm.
And what that terminology literally means was that there was a communicative relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that communicative relationship begins with God and the Word, or Father and Son, as we know it. Mm-hmm. And so the Lord began to unpack this to me about how that contemplative prayer and what we understand and what I define as contemplative prayer doesn't begin so much with me speaking with God, but it begins with me making myself available to hear from God.
Yeah, so good. So good.
That's the RK, or the beginning. In the beginning, mm-hmm. was the Word. Mm-hmm. Well, the Word was issued forth from the deep desire and the constituency and the what we know of as the nature of God, mm-hmm. the nature of Abba. And it comes forth, it's issued forth, and is truly Him, part of His being.
Yeah.
But in the subsequent reality of what the Logos looks like, mm-hmm. of how we define Logos, mm-hmm. Logos is the result of Theos.
Mm.
So in our own lives then, what we define as prayer and we define as our spiritual lives for so long in what we thought of was defined by our own subjective idea.
Yeah, yeah.
But what Abba is what Abba is bringing us back to, reconciling us to the fact He as originator, mm-hmm. and creator, mm-hmm. in that role is once again giving us revelation to live within the understanding of His objectivism, so that our subjective experience is based on His objectivity, mm-hmm. or His objectivism. In other words, what He knows to be true and real.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that picture of God's objectivism and what it means to live a contemplative prayer life, mm-hmm. It's Isaiah defined it like this, Catherine. Mm-hmm. Incline your ear, mm-hmm. and come unto me.
Yeah.
Lean into, mm-hmm. what I have to say.
Good, good.
Let every other voice. Paul said there are so many voices that have gone, mm-hmm. out into the world.
No kidding.
Uh-huh. So many.
Mm-hmm. And so many voices in our heads, right? Just we're very noisy inside. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Very noisy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But when we lean our ear into Him,
yes.
we make who He is, what He has to say, prominent in everything else. Or in other words, once again, we give Him place back as creator. Not like that we had to give it to Him,
right?
But we allow ourselves to be seated, mm-hmm. at that place of the right hand then.
Yeah, so it's kind of we're in our subject, because the object of truth is that He is that. He's always speaking, always has stuff to say. He is the Word, but we're so cluttered in our minds, we're not making space to hear what He always wants to say. So when people tell me that God's not speaking, I'm like, no, we're not hearing. And so the problem is in making that space. And I love that. That's incline the ear. A lot of times I describe it as turning our affection to God. So where we're preoccupied with all these different things and all these different voices and just running hither and thither. Okay. That's where our affection is going. And then we say, like, in the midst of all that, I'm pulling back. And I'm turning my affection, I'm inclining my ear to the One who has something to say always that will be life-giving. But that requires me to go deep in myself and turn away from all the noise externally, but especially internally, so that I can incline, I can hear, and turn my affection and make that space for Him, which is what does, you know, it's really cool, because when you think about kind of what we're doing now, we're making space for this relationship and to share with one another. And so, which is beautiful. But this is what we need. We need to make space for God, who's always there, who always has stuff to share. By, and it is a discipline to turn away from the noise externally, internally, and hone in, incline our ear, turn our affection, however it will, there's a lot of words we can use.
Sure.
So that we can hear, because he has so much to say to us, and it's beautiful.
Miss Catherine, one of the things that I think that if we would kind of once again begin to just shift the paradigm just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, like take yourself for instance. You're a mother. You have business you do. You're a wife. You operate within your community. There's so many different roles that we carry.
Mm-hmm.
We carry many different hats. I do many, many different things.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways that we can shift the paradigm, Ms. Catherine, is in thinking of myself as a father, a pastor, a mentor, a counselor, a community leader, all of the whatever else role that I fit in, what we've always done is we try to compartmentalize each one of those roles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then within the context of that compartmentalization, we begin to try to include God within each one of those.
Yeah.
What if we totally shifted that, put him back to author and creator?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the taxonomy, instead of having a top-down paradigm,
mm-hmm.
that we turn the triangle upside down and we have an upside-down pyramid,
yeah,
and to where that he is the foundation of it all,
mm-hmm.
and that everything that happens flows out of that. Instead of trying to include him in that,
right,
we make him the author and the originator of, so that I'm not a father that has a relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
I am a son of God, and I am, and because of that, I am a father.
Perfect.
I am a son of God, therefore I am a mentor. I am a son of God, therefore I am a teacher. I am a son of God, therefore I am a husband. Mm-hmm. Everything flows out of that, instead of just simply trying to compartmentalize and put him in all those different boxes. And I think that that is literally what we define as, to be quite frank, and not when I say this, I don't mean this derogatorily at all, but we become double-minded when we start doing all of that. When we start trying to compartmentalize
mm-hmm.
him in each one of those aspects, we kind of bind him to this comprehensibility. We try to put the incomprehensible God into this,
right,
this static plate, if you will.
Mm.
And he's a dynamic being and ever moving, ever living, ever being.
So good. Oh my goodness. I love that. So it all originates from that relationship with him that was established out of the relationship of Trinity, Father, Son, and Spirit that exploded in a race of children. So we're all, everything we do is coming from that place, not trying to get there or not trying to stick it into some artificial box, which is beautiful. So your fathering is a manifestation of you being fathered. Your mentoring is a manifestation of the mentorship of God. Everything we do is sourced in God, is a manifestation of that relationship where it comes from. That's amazing. I love that. That's so good. It's so life-giving and so dynamic.
It is dynamic. That's the revelation, you know, in Isaiah chapter 51.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to quote it if that's okay. Isaiah 51:1, it says, "You who pursue righteousness," or "you who chase God," in other words, "look to the rock from which you were hewn."
Yeah.
Look to Abraham. Look to your father. Look to Sarah, the quarry from which you were dug. And one of the things that we began to realize was the revelation that Abram had that led to where we are today in faith. What we know of as faith was not that God was somewhere simply outside of his father's land, outside of his father's house, or outside of the place that he knew, but he was stepping outside. Really, what God was calling him to do was step outside the smallness of his own being at that moment. Just, in other words, everything that he thought, once again, his subjective experience up until that time had been to step out into a land that was broad and expansive and begin to see that no matter where he was, that God was there. That's where he was, that Abba Father was in the middle of his journey.
Yes.
So literally, we always talk about have you ever noticed, Catherine, that it was called the land of promise or the promised land?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the thing about it is that we try to encapsulate that in a geographical location. But what Father was actually showing Abram was this, was that as soon as you step outside of yourself, you step into my promise. And it doesn't matter where that geographical location is. The land of the promise is the land that I have always called you to dwell in. And when we begin to understand that in these moments of solitude, when we are able to lay aside the distractions and the even the discomforts or the conflicting thoughts and the massive outpouring of need for our attention, when we're able to set that aside and come back to this singularity, what we would say in theology is the monotheistic reality that there is only one true God, that there's one, and that he is all and in all and through all, that when we begin to realize that, the complexities of life begin to melt away just like wax before the fire. That's what Psalm 68:2 is telling us. As wax melts before the fire, so will all of the everything that gives context to our reality literally just vanishes when we begin to see that there is one and he is the one and we are in him. And that's the reality of the theory of everything, if you will.
Wow. Well, and the thing is, this is our starting place. We're not trying to get there. It's an objective truth that God wants us to experience subjectively, which is why making room in our headspace, in our being for the awareness of this oneness with God that's always there, out of which everything flows, is where things come into order. And it sounds like you were saying that with the complexities of life, there's a simplicity that brings peace and context and wholeness and meaning and life, because it's the journey with him. So you never get to go, you're already there. It's your starting place. It's your middle place. It's your dwelling place. It's your alpha. It's your omega and every letter in between. And so that is increasingly an experiential reality, not just an objective reality that we are called to experience. And this is what we're needing by this discipline. And there's some practicalities. Like if I was saying, okay, I need to set a time to incline my ear, to turn my affection, however our terminology is, for contemplative prayer, and experiencing what always has been true. So how would you coach someone through that or lead them through that? Just help us out here.
So in my discipleship classes here at home,
mm-hmm.
one of the things I teach is, and you used this terminology a while ago, space.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things when we think about space, and you actually said it, Miss Catherine, when you talked about interior space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interior world, right? Our interior, mm-hmm. our interior life.
Right.
And so just like we have space that we inhabit in our home.
Yes.
One of the things that I teach is creating a room. The Bible said, the Bible calls it this, the secret place.
Yay. Mm-hmm.
The secret place.
Mm-hmm.
Now that secret place is the place that we might go in our house. We might find a place in our house, the closet, if you will.
Right.
Go into your closet, right?
Right?
The closet, if you will. But that space is not only a space like, say, inside of our home or something like that, but that space can also imply a time.
Hmm.
So there is such a thing as time and space, and they exist together. Time and space in this continuum that we live in exist together.
Mm-hmm.
So I always try to encourage people. Some people are morning people. Some people like to get up. My favorite time, Catherine, I am a early morning person.
Mm-hmm.
I am not promoting this as anybody has to do this, but I typically get up between 3 a.m. and 3:30 a.m. every morning. And I spend that time. I try to spend from about 3 a.m. till 8 a.m. in the morning with that. This is my time to pray, study, be quiet, contemplative prayer, mm-hmm. hear the voice of my Father, what my Father is teaching me, how that I can relate to Him and what my day is going to hold
mm-hmm.
and what His instructions are for me in that day. Now, I know to some people that sounds exquisite. That sounds like, who has that much time a day? Well, not everybody does. And some, not everybody's going to want to spend, get up that early in the morning per se.
Sure.
But I think the important thing to take, the takeaway from that is that we make it a necessity that we have time and space.
Yes.
It is the realm in which we inhabit.
Hmm.
We have been born into this world. We are not of this world, but we are in this world. So being in this world, we have to act within the context of what that means. And that's within the time-space continuum.
Yes.
So to make this life a priority and to give it prioritization, it needs to encompass both of those things. It needs to encompass time and space. I have friends that are night owls that would rather wait till the children go to bed
right.
at 10 o'clock at night and spend from 10 till midnight
mm-hmm,
in their quiet time.
Yeah.
No matter what that time is, I always encourage, no matter when that is, make that place and that space has to consist of time mm-hmm. and space.
Yes. Yes, that's true. And it works in your life. So whatever makes sense, you know, God is on the entire continuum of time and space. But when we make that a priority, and set that aside, we're able to partake of that and partake of what He has in the needs for the moment. Because a lot of the noise is coming from fear, is coming from unmet needs, is coming from, you know, whatever. And God addresses all of that. And so have you found as you've done that your mind is quieter? I mean,
absolutely.
I'm kind of leading you, but I'm just saying the benefits of that are manifold. So maybe you can speak to that.
That's, you know, some of the things that I sent you in the article that I wrote, per se, one of the most prominent and needful benefits
mm-hmm.
of this is the renewing of our mind. It allows us to begin to align our thoughts with God's truth. It begins to allow us to see. From it adjusts the lens of our vision so that the perspectives that we view our entire world from began to take on the conceptualization that God has of that matter.
Yeah.
When my perceptions are based simply and solely on what we would say natural leanings, or in other words, what I can touch, taste, see, feel, smell, hear. When my perceptions are simply based on those naturally oriented attributes and traits, then my perception, or what ultimately leads to my conceptualization, can become individualistically biased.
Yes.
Prejudicial bias.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But when I am able to look through the lens of agape, when agape becomes my lens, then I am able to love the world as he has loved the world. And even though the situation that I might be looking into might be one that might not, it might not be the happiest of moments. We all go through times in our lives, Miss Catherine, that can cause us hurt, that can cause us pain, even that can cause us discontent, many of these different things. But when we're able to conceptualize our entire worldview from the conceptualization of the lens of agape through Abba's love, that completely renews our thoughts and our minds. And then that leads us, obviously, to being strengthened in faith, strengthened in trust, and knowing that God's plan for our lives is not without purpose, that it's not null, it's not void, that there is an end to this matter, as he spoke to Jeremiah when he said, "My thoughts for you are of peace. I have purpose for you. There's an end for all of this, and I am determined to bring you to this end, to this place of peace." Yeah. And even in the midst of that, we're able to begin to see through that lens of agape.
I'm sorry, it's such a hot button for me, because that is my starting point. And I you know, it's kind of funny, because I preach so much on it, I get into trouble. You know, you don't preach on anything else. It's like, when we get it, I'll stop. But it's that lens of love that addresses everything. It's the starting point. So there's nothing, because he is love, so there's nothing that is not inclusive in that. It answers everything ultimately. And so that's beautiful. And that's the only lens that sees 2020, right? And so we're getting our lenses cleaned up, getting the pittedness out, whatever, the darkened, the blind, whatever, healed and cleansed, and all of that, so that we can see, and then we can see one another, the problems and one another, the world, the issues through that lens, and be an answer for the very things that ails humanity.
You know, the scripture tells us, Catherine, that we've been given the ministry of reconciliation.
Yes.
And we know now through ever-increasing revelation that it was God that was in Christ reconciling the world. It wasn't, God didn't, it was us that needed the reconciliation.
Exactly.
God was not holding the sins of mankind against him. Mm-hmm. God was reconciling us back to, he was, in other words, the scripture said it this way, the enmity that existed between us and God was on our, that was us.
Exactly. It was our,
that wasn't him. That was us.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's still our problem. This is what needs to be healed. And absolutely. Cause God's heart is wide open, right? Wide open. And it never closes depending on our behavior, whatever, our brokenness, all of that. The more in darkness we are, the more we need that open heart. He's so available to us. It's the starting point, and it never changes, which is amazing. Yeah. So keep
when the lens of that love gets readjusted back to 2020.
Yes.
Like you said.
Yes.
When it gets readjusted back to 2020 again, the very thing that would at one time have caused us to walk away from someone or to walk away from a circumstance because of derision or because of hurt will literally, just like the eternal Son himself, it will send us to them. God so loved the world that he sent.
Yeah. Yeah.
That love sends to it goes to the very place where that enmity exists, and it refuses the authority of that enmity.
Absolutely. That's so good.
It refuses to allow the enmity to bear the weight of authority in that conversation.
Wow. So good.
Now, if the enmity itself chooses to walk, I can't change your opinion of me. I can't change someone else's opinion of me.
Mm-hmm.
But what I can change is my availability to that person. So God made himself available, and he's continually, by the Spirit of grace, making himself available to humanity. Because in that place where the enmity formerly resided, now is the superior reality of grace, which carries the authority of union. And union always bears more weight. The Old Testament calls it glory, or the word that we know of in the Hebrew as kabod. It carries weight.
Weighty glory.
It's weighty glory. It carries a weight that any enmity, any diffusion of any kind of offense cannot stand up against the weight of the agape of God's love.
That's because love never fails.
You know? Love never fails.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It always, always keeps on loving, always, nothing changes, which is what we can rest our entire existence on. It's and retreat back to that hiding place, retreat back to this carved out time and space to experience the truth of that, and answers everything and unveils us and unveils our minds where we're clouded, and unveils our vision where it's obscured. And so that we can handle the issues that come up, because you live in the same fallen world that I do. There are issues that come up, in our lives, in everyone's lives. And this is the way that we can come from the place where it's all encompassing, and God already knows the beginning from the end, has helped us in that. So this is so amazing. I'm loving this. Keep on going, Robin. This is so good.
Well, I love how that you made the comment a while ago, Ms. Catherine, about our starting place, our reference point. Mm-hmm. I think that that's one of the things that contemplative prayer, reflective solitude, I believe that's so important, because it brings us back to center. It gives us a continual reorientation. Colossians chapter 2 says this in verse 9. In him dwells all the fullness of the Godhead bodily. Verse 10, and you are complete in him.
So good.
That is the acorn that will grow an oak tree. One acorn will only produce one oak tree, but one oak tree can produce a million acorns.
Wow. Wow. I didn't know that. I knew it could produce a lot, but not a million.
Whew. A million acorns.
Uh-huh.
One oak tree over its lifetime can produce a million acorns. But the thing about each one of those acorns is this: within the singularity of that seed, within the singularity of that seed dwells the DNA of every one of those oak trees that'll be produced.
Amazing.
Every single one.
It's such a miracle.
It's a miracle. Mm-hmm. It's what we talk about when Peter said that you've been made partakers of the divine nature.
Yeah.
And when we begin to operate in this communicative relationship, the same relationship, because truly what it is that we've been invited into is what our friend Baxter calls the perichoresis, or what was known in by the early patristic fathers, is how we talk about in these circles like that we run in, these theological circles anyway. The perichoresis is where the circle dance, or where that the union, or where the communicative relationship, the mutual indwelling, and the formulated, the life and the existence of what we know as Father, Son, and Spirit. That's the relationship that we've been brought into. We've been brought into that. They did not necessarily come to have a relationship. They brought us into their relationship.
Exactly.
And so in the singularity of that relationship, that communion begins to carry this content that we begin to, show forth, that we, like the scripture tells us, that you will show forth the glory of the Lord, that we will bear the image, that that image, that likeness begins to be seen and be known. But we only are able to bear that image or reflect that image in the manner that we behold it.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's what 2 Corinthians 3:18 is talking about when he says, "For we all with open face behold, as in a looking glass, the glory of the Lord." Yes. And we're changed into the same image from glory to glory.
Yes, yes.
And you know, one of the fascinating things about the word glory, Miss Catherine, it comes from the root word doxa in the Greek. That word doxa, if you look in the Thayer's lexicon, will simply tell you that we always have had these ideas of glory as these supreme manifestations and and these fascinating supernatural events. Theirs defines glory as simply the thought, the sentiment, and the opinion of God.
Ooh, wow. Okay. That's a new one. I love it.
So I am able to shine.
Yes. Go ahead.
I am able to reflect the glory of God in that when I have sat with him face to face and beheld the thought, the sentiment, and the opinion that he has for me.
So good.
That I can reflect that same thought set, because I know that in the very same manner that he has it for me, that he has loved the entire world.
Exactly.
And without so that exception. I no longer know you after the flesh. This is what 2 Corinthians 5 is talking about. When he said, we no longer know them after the flesh.
Right.
Even though we knew Christ that way, we don't know him that way any longer. But we know one another by the Spirit.
Absolutely. That we're already one in the midst of this interpenetrating relational singularity, which is so beautiful. And out of that, the thought sentiment, I can't remember the third thing you said with that, of God is reflected through us. It's really the manifestation of the sons and daughters of God, where what's on the inside is unveiled in the open, but has been there all along. Because his thoughts, sentiments, opinions of you as an image bearer is like, oh, that's my son and my daughter and whom I well please. And he adores us. He adores each and every one. As no one is outside that except for what they're experiencing in their minds, which is why we need this renewal time. That's so good.
Yes. You know, the Hebrew word for the word blessed, Miss Catherine, is the word barak.
Yeah.
Barak. One of the fascinating and one of the fascinating contents of that word that it offers us is that word means to kneel before.
Exactly, as in worship.
Now, when we hear what we call, a lot of people know the song that Carrie Job did called The Blessing.
It's beautiful.
Which is beautiful, right? The Lord bless you and keep you.
Yes.
Well, that is that is an Aaronic blessing that was given to the nation of Israel.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Through the Aaronic priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
And I transcribed that one time and shared it with some people. Mm-hmm. And literally, if we was to say that, if you and I was to truly begin to relate that from a Hebraic perspective,
yeah,
and what they would have actually heard,
mm-hmm.
it gives us a different picture
mm-hmm.
of what it is that it is
mm-hmm.
to live in a face-to-face relationship with Abba.
Yes.
And it would say this: Yahweh will kneel before you and present you with gifts, placing a hedge of protection around you so that you might know safety and security.
Wow. Wow.
The Lord bless you and keep you. That's what we hear. What they hear mm-hmm. is Yahweh will kneel before you and present you with gifts, placing a hedge of protection around you, so that you may know, and that word know right there, experientially understand what it is to live in the safety and the security of his divine presence.
Wow. Wow, what a...
I think, Miss Catherine, that if we would once again begin to teach that, to make that common union, the communion
mm-hmm.
of absolute necessity,
mm-hmm.
and make that a priority mm-hmm. as we teach that to young ones, even in the early, what we would know of as discipleship stages,
mm-hmm.
what would that do, Miss Catherine, for the context of then? So I'm making a full circle here, because I'm going all the way back to where you talked about reference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So instead of teaching them that we're trying to go in this place called process to go from beginning to end, in other words, we're trying to get to
right.
Colossians 2:10.
Right.
We're working all our lives to try to get to heaven, in other words.
How exhausting.
that literally becomes the place that we start them from.
From, exactly. We're starting from the heart of God. We're starting from the place where his heart is so available to us. He gets down to our level to kneel, to provide, to protect, to surround, to give gifts.
Yes.
Right where we need them. And that is the heart of love that does that, which is mind-blowing. And it's good, because our minds need to be blown.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we see the picture of John 13, Jesus takes up a basin and a towel,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and he kneels
yeah.
to wash their feet
mm.
in the form of a servant, because the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve.
Oh, true. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And if once again, within the context of what we know of as Christian leadership, I don't even like that word anymore, but I'll say it.
Which one, the just Christian or the leadership?
Christian.
Okay, I got it. You're not alone.
Yeah, just for the, I'm only saying it for the context.
Well, we understand, yes.
Yes. But if we would once again define
mm-hmm.
and model servant leadership,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but we would stop looking at just simply that we would turn, instead of buildings being churches, mm-hmm. that the homes where we raise our children become churches.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
And therefore, the schools where our children go become churches.
Yes.
And the communities wherein we live become churches, if you will, ecclesia. They become the places where we express and display the servant leadership model mm-hmm. that gives adequate defining mm-hmm. to the character, nature, and attribute of Abba. Because I truly believe, Miss Catherine, if the world was to see that, it's what Jesus prayed in John 17 when he said that when the world sees this very love, they're going to know that you sent me. What if our entire paradigm of evangelism is shifted because our devotional lives become so fixated on the centrality of our individual relationship with him that it's like tossing a rock in a pond and it becomes to be a ripple effect, and the love of Abba grows so deeply within the context of our community that instead of us going to try to talk people into joining our club, right, that people begin to see that. And just like in the beginning, they begin to say, what must we do to have that?
Wow. Which is
what must we do to be saved?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the paradigm of evangelism even changes, that when the love of Abba is so immensely seen and so and depicted so beautifully, literally, it's like the light, the city set up on a hill, that people in the darkness are going, I want some of that.
Yeah.
Where I'm at compared to where you're at, this is not good, but what that is good. I want that.
So good. That is so, and it's so true. It's like a new commitment I give you, that you love one another. By this, the world will know.
The world will know.
Like, we're famous for love, and that draws because it looks just like the one we're coming from, and actually they come from. You're actually drawn back to their original, a source and original design, and it's beautiful. Wow, this is so meaty and so good. Yeah. Well, what else? How else do you? We don't have a ton more time, but this is so good. So, what else do you have, Robin?
There's so much.
I know, right?
I would say this, Miss Catherine. There's some other places I would. Maybe we'll get to that another time. I have some beautiful pictures that the Book of Revelation depicts concerning the altar and what it is to what I call living before the altar or becoming the living altar. Becoming the living altar.
Yeah, beautiful.
And let me say it like this. In the Hebraic mind, one of the altar of incense, what that altar represented, Miss Catherine, the smoke that goes up from the altar, that sweet savor, the smoke that goes up from the altar, literally, and we've missed this a lot in our culture because we just don't, we're just not that familiar with that.
Right.
But what that represented and what they called it was literally the smoke was the soul of the offering.
Oh, it's beautiful. Wow. I haven't heard of that. How gorgeous.
It represented the soul of the offering.
Wow.
And so what that represents is what Jesus was talking about when he was talking about us laying down our life or laying down our suke. And we always made that a thing of almost this dirge or this sacrifice of I've got to die. And it had to be this carry this horrific context.
It's
to
heavy.
It.
Yeah.
Yes. But what Jesus is telling us is that when you lay down, when you offer everything that you are in your present moment, you arise just like the smoke arises from the altar. You arise or you ascend into a realm of greater reality. Wow. You ascend to a place of greater clarity, of more purposeful vision, of broader expanse of wisdom. There's so much benefit that when we give ourselves to this contemplative life that affects us so much farther and so broader than just simply the time and the space that we allot for it. It's once again becomes the seed that grows and into it's what Jesus was talking about in Matthew 17 when he talks about the mustard seed.
Yeah.
It's what he's referring to. It looks small, but what it produces is vast. Yeah. And this is what he's trying to get us to understand, that when we give ourselves completely, and when we give ourselves time and space to contemplative prayer, to hearing the Father, to knowing him, and living within the context of a face-to-face relationship, Catherine, it doesn't just affect me. It affects you. It affects my household. It affects my children. It affects my community. It'll ultimately affect a region, and it will ultimately, and has, we've seen it go on for 2,000 years. Yeah. It has affected the globe.
Yes.
It has affected the globe. And it's not stopping.
No.
There is no stopping this. There is a continual, light is progressive. Light doesn't stop moving. And this is the freedom that you can experience within the context of light.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop. It knows no boundaries and it knows no end. And he's inviting us by way of this contemplative life to experience the place where time, space, and constriction exist no more.
Wow. Wow. That is heady, gorgeous, glorious stuff. That is amazing. And what a return on investment.
Right.
I mean, for the time that we have, that this is what everyone has access to, which is beautiful, you know, through this discipline. Well, this is amazing. So I will, I can't remember if you sent me the article in a link. I'm trying to remember how I accessed it. But if there's a link to the article, make sure that I get that so I can put it in the notes. And
yes,
then
ma'am.
For the show. And then also your website, you just started a course, correct? That an online course, which is amazing. That what tell me about that so we can hear people can hear and partake
it's part of Mighty Networks, and it's the community that we're building. It's a discipleship training community and fellowship. It has many different aspects to it. It's called The Way with Robin Michael Beach, and there will be ministerial courses on there, the live streams. I will have different featured speakers and teachers on there. So I'm not going to mention names yet. I'll release them. I'm sure I'll have this amazing lady named Catherine Toon that'll be on there.
Sign me up. It's great.
That will be, and there'll be some others that I won't say the names now, because if I did, a lot of people would know them, but that we'll be announcing that will be just a fellowship, discipleship, and a very comprehensive arena that people can share with one another, glean, learn, and grow together.
Well, it's beautiful. So needed. So needed.
Yes.
Wonderful. So if people want to contact you, what's the best way to contact you?
My email address is settled.devotion@outlook.com. Okay. And I handle most of my communication through that method and that means. I have a public profile on Facebook, and I'm on many different social media platforms. And we are in the process right now of revamping our website for the Way Fellowship. And I will make sure that everyone has that. That's in a reconstruction phase right now. So otherwise I would give that to you too. But that's the best ways to get a hold of me, and just follow us, and we are on this journey together.
We are.
That's one of the that's one of the beauties of all of this is that God has allowed us to have so many different beautiful connections and so many different beautiful people that have poured into our lives. And so our me and my wife and our entire family, our goal is to give back in the very same measure that it's been given to us. And that's extremely important to us.
Wow, that's beautiful. And wow, you are doing that. Well, this has been so good. You're going to need to come back. You do know this. Yes. Okay.
I would love to anytime.
Yay. So we will do that. This has been so wonderful beyond words. So beautiful. Thank you, Robin, for blessing us in such a gorgeous way. And so everyone, like this, share this. People need this information. I'll include all the appropriate stuff in the notes, and go find Robin and everything that he's up to, which is incredible. And yeah, and we will just continue on this journey together.
Amen. Thank you, Ms. Catherine. It's been a pleasure.
It has been so much fun, Robin. So everyone, share this and have a wonderful day.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Perspectives with Catherine Toon. For additional information and resources, please visit catherinetoon.com.